Well, good morning. My name is Brent. I'm the lead pastor here. And as you saw in that video, we're going to be addressing what I think is a challenging topic over the next several weeks, but I think it's a critical point for us to ask some of these questions. And it's this big question here is, why do we give up on God? And maybe you're here today and maybe you're thinking, well, I've never given up on God. This doesn't have anything to do with me. That's fine. Go ahead and go to sleep right now. Take a nap. I'm just kidding. Because even if you haven't given up on God, you probably know somebody who has. You probably either work with somebody or sit next to someone in class or live next to someone who at some point in their life maybe gave God a chance. Maybe looked to God and because of events or because of circumstances or because of something in their life, they ended up giving up on God and they walked away, because we cannot ignore the statistics. You know, one thing statistics don't do, you can manipulate them, but they don't lie. But the statistics tell us that every year that passes, the number of people who are walking away from faith, the number of people who are walking away from church, the number of people who are walking away from God continues to grow more and more and more. And if we don't begin to stop and evaluate why, I think we're in trouble. Now, this message is not a message for the church, to be honest with you. Next week's message is not a message for the church, and the week after that is not a message for the church. This is a message for anybody who looks at God and says, you know, I don't understand. I'm not there. I don't get it. And so that's what we want to do for the next several weeks, is we want to look at this and ask these difficult questions. We want to begin today with a question like this: why did I even give up on God? Next week, we're going to look at the question and say, does God even deserve a second chance? What is it about God that makes somebody like me or one of the pastors here at Ashworth Road stand up here and tell you that God is worthy of a second chance? We'll talk about that next week. And then the third week, we're going to talk about, do I even deserve a second chance? Maybe because of your life, maybe because of circumstances, maybe because of where you are, you look at where you are and you think, you know, it's not a matter of I've given up on God. I've given up on God because He's given up on me. And do we ever get to that place with God where He does wash His hands of us and says, that's it? So we're going to answer these difficult questions. We're going to spend some time here. And as I said, today we're starting with, why did I give up on God? I have to admit, one of my glaring character flaws, and I have many, my children and wife can attest to these, but I will tell you that one of my glaring character flaws is that I have a tendency to rush to judgment. I have a tendency to judge by the way things look, and I just hear a small piece of information and I can go way to an extreme and make a pretty sound and stubborn stand on little information. It's a skill, I admit. The way you're looking at me, you're like, well, I don't do that. And some of you are just liars. Some of you are just lying right there looking at me like, well, I'm glad that's not me. Some answer for your spouse. Who is that spouse is describing? No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. You'll have problems tomorrow or this afternoon. No, but I look at it and I easily find myself jumping to conclusions. And this happens all the time in our marriage. So in our marriage, you know, something will happen with the kids. And so Carrie will come to me, and Carrie is a communicator. And so she'll say, well, Brent, this child did this. And I'll hear seven words, and that's all I need to hear. And I'm like, well, let's take care of this problem. Before I get to the end, and Carrie's like, well, I misunderstood, or the kid repented and asked, you know, knew they did wrong, or all this, I'm already gone. I'm already up the stairs, you know. In the olden days, I'd have whipped the belt off, you know, and ready to go beat a child. We don't do that anymore. We're foster parents. We're not allowed. We can't do that. So don't be calling DHS on me now. Leave me alone. But I rush to snap judgments. I need to learn a lot, and I think I'm getting better. It's just, man, it's a long process. I'm getting better at learning to ask more questions, to stop and evaluate a little harder and deeper and think through things before I get to a rash judgment. Now, I don't know about you, but maybe I'm the only one that does that kind of thing. Or maybe you've experienced some of that occasionally in your own life or in your own family, in your own marriage. You know, if you're married, God help you, because I'm sure you do that at least some point in your marriage. It happens. It is. But it's not that it is a problem in our relationships. It's a problem for me as a parent. It's a problem for me as a husband. But more importantly, it's a problem for me in my relationship with God. And what I find sometimes is this rush to judgment isn't just in my physical face-to-face relationships, that I also find I rush to judgment sometimes with God. You know, God, why have you done this? Why didn't you do this? You have failed me. You have let me down. If you're either all-powerful, you don't care. If you're not all-powerful, how are you God? And before we know it, if we're not careful, this rush to judgment, these questions that begin to emerge can begin to have a very detrimental effect on our lives. When that spills over into our relationship with God, I think it creates in us a crisis of faith. If you're like me, the Sunday after I was born, I was in church, most likely in Sunday school, because that's what my parents did. And so the faith that I have now is the faith that was pretty much handed to me from the moment I came out of my mother. And that's just the reality. But sometimes as I've gotten older, and maybe you have too experienced this, that the faith you had as a child is not really enough of a faith to continue to sustain you as an adult. You find that some of the stories, and we did a whole summer of them, those Sunday school stories and the miracles, and you find, yeah, those are really neat and powerful as a kid, but as an adult, you find them lacking. You find them short. And maybe you, as you get older, you went to college, and or before you get to college, maybe it's even in junior high and high school, you look around and you see your friends, and you see them living a lifestyle, and it looks really fun. I mean, they're having a blast. Their Facebook pages are covered with pictures that look like it's amazing. But because of your faith rules, you don't feel like you can join in. And it leads you to begin questioning. And you wonder, why is God such a killjoy? Why doesn't he want me to live the good life? Why does he keep holding me back? And then that faith that we had as a child, we see that it just begins to be diminished along the way. You get to college, you find that you're one of few in the entire organization, in the entire university, that has any type of faith at all. And you begin not only just to see that no one else really has much faith, not no one, but most people. Your professors don't encourage it. In fact, they attack it. And you find yourself going, well, maybe there is this conflict between science and faith. Maybe it doesn't all measure up. And you get older, and you start living life, and then life happens to you. And then the questions begin to get greater and greater, and maybe you're dealt a bad hand in life. You've experienced trauma, or you have watched, or you're even now watching someone close to you suffer. And even though you've done your best to live a good life, you just can't make sense of why this is happening to you. And it causes us to get to a place where we begin to doubt God, we doubt his goodness, and we even doubt his existence. And have you ever gotten to that place where you just wonder, what's the point with God? I want you to know that this is a safe place to be able to express that. Now, I grew up in a place where it wasn't really that my parents, I don't blame them, it was just kind of an environment where questioning was wrong. And questioning and even approaching a subject like this was really, don't do it. You're a bad person. You're evil. The devil's gotten in your head. You need to get the devil out. You know, that kind of thing. But I think, as I've grown older, what I have come to experience is that if we don't create a place for us to bring honest questions before one another and God, we'll do more damage to our faith than the questions ever could. And so that's why I want us to look at these things, is because as I found out in my own life, what led me to faith as a child no longer seems to be a faith that's going to keep me there. It seems that my faith needs to be bigger and deeper. And as we are faced with the questions, what happens when the reason we came to faith is no longer good enough to keep us there? What happens when that reason that we had is no longer there? I think the difficulty, the challenge is we start giving up slowly on God. I will say that I don't think anybody ever necessarily wakes up one morning and says, I think I'm done with God today. I've been going to church my whole life. I've been a faithful follower of Jesus, but I'm done now. I don't think it happens that way. I think it happens slowly. I think it happens slowly through various things that happen in our life that begin to erode a faith. And because we're not, there's multiple reasons, and we're going to talk about them today, but it continues to erode until we get to the faith that we do wake up one day and we say, I'm just not into God. God has failed me. God's not good. I'm moving on. And that's what I want to do for a few minutes this morning, though. If you find yourself there, if you find yourself in a place where you struggle with faith, what I want to do is I'd ask you this morning if you would set aside the struggles that you're having. If you've walked away from God, or maybe you're still trying to hang on to God, but you're really struggling, I would ask that this morning we need to question why we're willing to walk away. What is it that is driving us to say, I'm going to be done with God? And just for a moment this morning, I want to ask you to consider this. Was the reason you walked away from God really a good enough reason to walk away? Was God truly the one to blame? Or could it be that God got the blame when there's really more at work than what we want to admit or realize? I know that's a big ask, but I want to ask if you would do that. Let's suspend doubt for just a moment, and let's dig in and see if maybe there's something bigger at play here. In the New Testament, we find a parable that Jesus told that I want us to look at today that I think can shine some light on and give us insight on why people walk away from God. What is it that motivates people to turn their back and say, I'm done with this? Jesus tells a parable. He often taught in parables, and a parable is simply a short story that Jesus told using real-world, tangible examples to make the spiritual point. He wanted to use things that the people would understand so they could get the point of what he was trying to say. And as we do, we're going to be in Luke chapter 15. So you can look in your Bibles or turn on your phones. We'll have it on the screens. Luke chapter 15. And we're going to read a very familiar story. But before we get there, let me give you some background. Jesus, at this point in his ministry, he's got quite a following. People are swarming around him. They want to see the miracles. They want to hear what Jesus has to say. But there are a lot of undesirable people that are after him. Not after him, but following him, that want to be close to him. He's speaking something they really desperately want to hear. But because they're the undesirables, they're the prostitutes and the tax collectors, the scum of the society at that time, the religious leaders look at this and they say, this is horrible. Jesus, you need to get away from these people. Keep in mind that the system of Judaism was infatuated with the idea of cleanliness and holiness and the idea that you would be around a, quote, sinner just by contact, just by being in proximity to them, made you unclean. And so that's why they're very critical of Jesus, because this contact with sinners was making him, in their eyes, unclean. And they criticized him because this is something they said about him. This man welcomes sinners and he eats with them. God forbid he be around them. So he's taken all this criticism, and as these religious leaders are criticizing him, he breaks into three parables. And we're only going to look at the last one. But the first parable is about lost sheep, something they would have been very familiar with. The second one was about a lost coin, another idea that they would have been very familiar with. And then the third one he talks about is the parable of the lost son. And he begins to teach them here. And what I want us to do today is, as we look at the parable of the lost son or the prodigal son, I want us to look at two out of the three main characters. In a few weeks, we're going to come back to this and finish up the parable. But for this week, I just want to look at two people and see if we can understand why they gave up on God. Okay? So Luke chapter 15, we're going to start reading in verse 11. Here it is. It says, Jesus continued. So he's telling, this is the third of the three parables. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided the property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, and he set off for a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Now remember, pigs in Judaism are unclean, untouchable. You, as a good Jewish boy, you would never have anything to do with pigs. And to sit there and to feed the pigs is horrible, but to want what the pigs eat tells you exactly how much need he was in, how desperate he was. It says then in verse 17, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. Hired servants, he's talking about day laborers. These aren't even the servants that live there. These are the people that just come in and work for his dad on a daily basis. He says, I could be one of those. He says, I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. So make me like your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to the father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servant, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, What's going on? The servant said, Your brother has come, and your father's killed the fatted calf because of him, and he's back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours who squandered your property on prostitutes comes home. You kill the fatted calf for him. My son, the father said, you were always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he is found. This is a powerful story, and before we get too far into it, I want you to understand that the main theme of the story gets to the heart of why Jesus himself came, to highlight why he was here, that God himself came to earth to pursue those who were far from him, and that he offers forgiveness and love to those who will seek him and repent. But we're going to get to that in the coming weeks. Today we're going to kind of look at a very obscure side of this that I doubt you've ever looked at in a message before. Because what I want us to look at is, in these two sons, what are the major reasons that kept them from the Father? What kept them from experiencing the love that the Father had for them? Why were they so far away? And I think these two give us a great start, and then we'll add a couple more to it at the end. And it just simply begins with this. We look at the younger son, and we see two reasons why he was far from the Father. And it begins with this, by choice. He chose to walk away from the Father. He chose to go on his own way. The younger son looks at life. He looks at experiences and he says, like many of us say sometimes, you know what? I see that the grass is greener over there. There's a better life to be had than where I'm at right now. And so I want that life. I want to go over there. And sitting at home and working for Dad and living under Dad's roof with Dad's rules wasn't something he wanted to continue to do. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been in life and you think, I want out of this situation that I'm in? I mean, good grief, I've got a 20-year-old daughter in my house. She's lived in London for 2 years. Let me tell you what, it's a joy for her to be under my roof because it's, you know, the challenge of learning to live with an adult child in the home of a parent, right? And so we all understand what the son's going through, right? He's sitting there and he says, I want to live. I want life. This isn't life. I want to live and get out there and experience things. But what's so amazing about the son is that he didn't just say, I want something different. I'm going to pack my bags and leave. He looks at the father and he goes to Dad and he says, you know what, Dad? I want my inheritance now. I want what's coming to me after you die. Can you give that to me now? I want it right now. You see, after the son died, the father died, this younger son would be entitled to 1/3 of the estate. The older son would get 2/3 of the estate. That's just how it worked back then. But he looks at his 1/3 and the son says, I want it. And in essence, what the son is saying to the father is he says, you know what, Dad, I wish you were dead. Now we think, oh, that's harsh. But that is exactly what the younger son is saying to the father. I don't want to wait till you die. I wish you were dead now. Give me what I want. Now, in a culture and in a custom where a father would be perfectly justified to look at this son and, let's just be honest, smack him down, kick him out, throw him away. I mean, be like, who are you to come in here and tell me what I need to give you? How dare you say you wish I were dead? Get out of my house. I disown you. That would have been possible. That would have been, in my opinion, justified. Not really, I'm just kidding. I'm just making sure you're staying with me. I really would not advocate doing that. But the father hears the request of the son, and he doesn't do any of that. His response to the son is simply this, Okay. Okay. And understand, too, that this was a big deal. This would put the father at great financial risk. He was going to have to, the way he would have to give the son a third of his estate would put his future, as long as he was alive, at great risk. At great risk. But he was willing to do it because the son asked. And what's so amazing to me is that I don't take away from this picture, this story, that the father's an idiot. I don't think that the father's sitting around going, I'm going to give my son the money, and he is such a good son. He's going to go invest that money, and he's going to double that money, and man, things are going to be great. Because I'm just going to tell you, if one of my young children came to me and said, Dad, I wish you were dead. I want my inheritance. I'd say, well, here's your $5. Now go and live wild. But as I'd give them the money, I would sit here and I would know, this child is not going to make good decisions with this money. I mean, put yourself in the father's shoes. The younger son comes, says, I want my money. You're not sitting here going, that's my responsible kid. You're sitting there going, oh my word, this kid is going to go blow every single penny I give him. Every dime will be gone. And yet, for some amazing reason, the father does it anyway. At great risk to himself, at great emotional pain to himself, he does it anyway. And the younger son chooses to walk away. He chooses to go live this better life where the grass is greener, because that's what it looks like. And he does. He leaves and he goes. And what looks like life to the younger son, it was more appealing than staying with the father. And I think that's a trap that many people fall into. When we think about Jesus, when we think about Christianity, when we think about church, when we think about all these things, the furthest thing often from our minds is fun. You can amen that. The furthest thing from our mind is often life or freedom or any of these things. In fact, often when we think of church, we think of boring, dead, lifeless, rule, restricting. You know, you can keep going, right? We could fill in a page or 20 of reasons why church is not fun or following Jesus isn't fun. But that's the same trap that the son was caught in. He looked at staying with the father. He looked at staying at home where there really was life. And he said, that's not for me. And by choice, he gets up and he walks away. Entertainment, partying, success, the American dream, career activities, kids' activities, they can all have a greater appeal to us than this life of faith. That is the walking away from God that is solely our choice and our own doing. And on the surface, as it did to the younger son, it looks so appealing. I mean, good grief, it even feels appealing, right? I mean, let's just be real. If sin was not fun, if that life was not attractive, if it didn't feel good when we did it, we'd stop doing it, right? And the churches would be packed every Sunday because, man, that stuff over there is painful. It's not painful. It's enjoyable. And that's what the son wanted. And he went and he did it. And the things that pull us away from God are usually very appealing and fun. And maybe this is you. Maybe this is you. Maybe some point in your life you looked at God, you were following Jesus and things were great, but you looked and you thought, my friends are having so much more fun than me. I'm just going to walk away from Jesus for a little bit because I want what they've got. That preacher, he kept saying Jesus is life. Well, let me tell you, the life over here is in this party. It's in my career. It's in success. It's in having multiple cars. It's in having big houses. It's in having money in the bank. It's in letting my kids do anything and everything they want to do, because that's what's important. That's where life is. If that's you, what I want you to hear today is not from a man that is coming to you to judge you for that. You're hearing it from somebody who understands the struggle, who had the career, who had kids in activities, who strives to save money and buy the latest and greatest and keep up with the neighbors and all this. There is no judgment here in my voice. I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. But what I am wanting to lead you to a place is to just ask you the question, is it worth it? When the grass looks greener, is it really? Or is there a price to be paid for that life? Is it really, truly worth it? You know, one of the most difficult persons to talk to about faith, in my opinion, is somebody whose life is good, who has a good job, a good house, good kids, good family, but the only thing they're missing is Jesus. To me, that is the most difficult person to approach about faith. Why? Because they don't need Jesus. Everything in their life is fine. And so as Christians, oftentimes we sit and we wait and we think, oh, maybe there'll be a drama or trauma in their life. And then we can swoop in and tell them they need Jesus, right? I mean, isn't that how we work sometimes? And how sad of us that we don't have a faith strong enough to go and say, hey, Jesus is worth it even in the good times. Jesus is worth it even in when things are going right. And I just want to say, when I talk about that person that's living life and doing their thing without Jesus, I'm not criticizing, because many times they're very good people. They're doing very good things. They're donating to charitable causes. They're not bad people. We need to stop sometimes as the church villainizing people outside the church as if they're horrible people. They're not. They've just found a way to live life without Jesus. But to those people, I do want to say, even though life may be good and you think there's no need to Jesus, do you wonder sometimes if this is all there ever is? Do you wonder if, is this all that life is meant to be? Like the younger son, he's living it up. He's having a great time. He's partying hard. He's doing everything he wants to do. He's not telling himself no in any regard. But he still has to go to bed at some point. He still has to close his eyes. He still has to put his head on a pillow. And at some point, he's going to have to ask himself, is this all there is to life? And that's where I think, when we come to the issue of purpose, that there is a difference where Jesus can make a difference. When we look also at the son, we don't see only that he left by choice. We see something else in his life too. Once he left, there was something that happened to him. One was by choice, one was not by choice. There's two tragedies in this story. The first is he left and made foolish choices and wasted all his money. The second tragedy is this. There was a famine that hit the land. There was a massive famine, so much this man couldn't get a job. The best job he could hope for was feeding the pigs, and when he asked if I could eat some of the pig slop and pig pods, they said, no, you can't have anything. And because of this famine, because of this catastrophe, we find that he moved and stayed away from the Father because of what happened to him. What happened to him? Something completely out of his control. And I think sometimes that happens to us. Life happens, and we're forced in that crisis of faith moment, and it's what pulls us away from God. You lose your job unexpectedly, even though you were a good employee. You didn't get into the school or the program you wanted. Your boyfriend, girlfriend, or spouse decides to end that relationship and you didn't see it coming. A parent dies. A child is diagnosed with a disease. You can go on and on, and all those examples are things that I know have happened to people right here in Ashworth Road. Very real things. And we look at that and we say, life dealt us a bad hand. And it's very easy in those moments to get angry with God. It's very easy for us to want to blame someone. And we look and we say, where is God in this? Why is he not answering my prayers? Why is he not bringing the healing that I've been crying out for? Where are you, God? And when you say that, we find ourselves moving away from God. Now, I'm not going to tell you any of those statements are wrong. In fact, they're biblical. Go read the Psalms. Go find out where people who were men and women of faith cried out to God in their darkest moments and wondered, why am I having to go through this? Why am I having to experience this? Why am I feeling so far away from God? What I want you to hear is these questions are not bad, but don't allow those questions to pull you away from God. You see, I get it. When bad things happen, the problem of evil is one of the greatest problems, I think, today that keeps people from Christianity. If there's a God, why is he not healing? Why is he not doing this? It's easy for us to get there. And when bad things happen, we want to blame people. We want to blame someone. And God is just as good as anyone to blame. And when we pin it on God, we discover that we get angry with him, we get disconnected from him until we convince ourselves that God doesn't care. We convince ourselves that God is not good, and we convince ourselves that God is absent. But what I'd like to do is, as I asked you to kind of doubt your doubts earlier, I want you to do that right here in this moment, to stop and say, okay, what if God isn't the one doing these things to you? What if God is not sitting up there like the cosmic judge we often think he is and say, let me, you know what? Brent needs a little trouble. Life's a little too easy. Bzzz. Deal with that. Now, some of us, a little humanistic, human sadistic, right? I mean, we can be sadistic sometimes and evil towards one another, but we don't see that picture of God. What if God is not the one doing these things to you? What if instead of seeing God as distant and uncaring, what if in reality he is a loving father? And even though he is all powerful because of how he has created the world, a world that was created perfect and set up with sin, messed up with sin, what if because of the way it's created right now, he's just needing to allow this to go forward, even though we want him to fix everything right now? And what if God, instead of seeing him as the uncaring deity that sits far away that doesn't care, what if we see him instead as a father who, when he knows you go through trials and difficulty, who's not far away from you, but his, when your heart breaks, his heart breaks. When you struggle, he cares. And what if, just maybe, instead of blaming God, we think maybe this isn't God's fault. Maybe it's because we live in this messed up world full of messed up people, and that this brokenness isn't because of God, but it's actually because of his love. You know, to look at God, to understand that God was never content to leave things the way they are. He's always working to bring us back, to bring healing, to bring hope, to bring us to himself. And the ultimate picture we see there is how he sent Jesus. God in flesh came to us to live as we live, to take on himself the sin of the world, and to set into motion a series of events that would one day lead to that moment where once and for all pain and suffering would be dealt with and all heartache would be wiped away. We see that perfect picture of God in Jesus Christ, how he lived, how he interacted with people. And what do we see in Jesus? We see one who is full of compassion, one who cared deeply. We see in Jesus this amazing love. Please don't read into what I'm saying. I'm not telling you that you don't have a right to be angry or upset. What I'm telling you is that even in the midst of circumstances beyond your control, God is with you. He comforts those who mourn. He's with us in our suffering. He never leaves us. He never forsakes us. And even though at times it may feel like it, he is still there. What I'm asking is it possible that God isn't to blame for what you are experiencing? And even though it may look like he's abandoned you, he's been with you the entire time. There's a third perspective in the story. It's the older brother. This one's kind of interesting because the older brother stays with the father. He lives in the house. He works for the father. He kind of stays with the doing the right thing. But when we encounter him later in the story, we kind of see he's not there, is he? He's not with the father. He's kind of against the father. And I think we see that perspective as the person who does all the right things, says all the right answers, but God is just this insurance policy of what they can get out of life. They show up at church occasionally. They drop a 20 in the plate every now and then. But apart from that, there's really no evidence of God in their life. They look at the message of Christ and it makes them angry because they see all this grace and this love and being poured out on sinners and those who are far from God, those who don't deserve it. And this grace and this love, it seems so reckless. After all, I'm a good person. I've believed the right things. I've earned my status with God. And so should everybody else, so they say. The problem with this individual is this is not the gospel. This isn't Jesus. It's what Jesus came to correct. This idea that you can honor him with your lips but keep your heart far away from him. This person would never admit to giving up on God, but their faith is really in themselves, and they really are far from God. They have no need for Jesus or the cross because they trust in themselves, and they believe that God owes them, and that'll make it right. And this person who may be in this church right now, who may be saying, I've not given up on God, but in their heart is far away. The question is this you have to ask is, who are you really trusting in? Who are you really trusting in? Are you trusting in yourself or are you trusting in God? There are a couple other reasons I think people give up on God, not really seen in the story, but I think they're worth mentioning. The first one is this: bad theology. Bad theology. I think if we're not careful, we will find faith that fits better on a bumper sticker than it does in life. Ryan shared a story this week. Man, it breaks my heart. His older brother was in a church service one night. And it's in a youth group setting, and the youth leader calls everybody to the altar and to come and pray. And he tells the kids, he says, now here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to leave until you experience God. I don't want you to get up and leave from this place until you experience God. And his brother sat there and prayed and cried out to God and said, God, I want to experience you. And one by one, people started getting up and leaving and walking out of that room because they had experienced God. And at the end of the night, Ryan's brother is sitting right there alone, having cried out to God all evening and sitting there thinking now to himself, well, if God can't answer me, he must not be real. And to this day, Ryan's brother does not follow Jesus. Because of this moment where some stupid youth pastor makes a statement that says, don't leave until you hear from God. How stupid can you be? But how often do we allow bad theology to pull us away from God? And I'm not calling Ryan's brother stupid. It's more towards the youth pastor. Don't put kids in that situation. God deals with people individually. He deals with us differently. Not everybody's going to have this slain in the spirit moment where you fall out and speak in tongues. God deals with each of us differently. But to a teenager who's sitting there crying out to God, desperately wanting to experience God, whatever that nebulous word means most of the time, he gets up and he walks away, and he walks away from God forever. We've got to be willing to move away from bad theology. Is it bad theology that is pulling us away from God? We look and we think, this is how it's supposed to be, and maybe it's a pastor told you something sometime. You realize I'm not infallible, right? I tell my children I am, but that's a whole different story. We're not infallible. You know, sometimes I'll go back and listen to the podcast and I'll listen to me and I'll think, oh, good Lord, God forgive me for saying that. Sometimes we're just, you see me step away from my notes. Be listening in these moments. This is where you're going to catch me messing up because I haven't thought about it enough to, you know, I need to stand up here like this and just read because at least that's thought out. What are you carrying with you that has driven you further from God because somebody told you something that may or may not have been true theology, that may or may not be in the Bible? We need to get beyond bad theology, bumper sticker theology. It's deeper than that. It's richer than that. And I would challenge you that if bad theology has been the reason you've walked away from God, maybe it's time to look and question that theology and see, is it even real? Is it even right to begin with? The last thing I'll mention here is why we give up on God is this, simply this: bad Christians. Amen. You like that? Amen. You know who you are. The judgmentalism, the hypocrisy, the closed-mindedness, the unloving ways that we treat one another, and the unloving ways we treat the world. Let me just tell you, there have been, by the grace of God, I am still a Christ follower. Some of the deepest wounds I have experienced in my life have been at the hands of other Christians. Amen. Period. The world has never treated me nearly as poorly as Christians have. Shame on us. Shame on us. If a bad Christian has been the reason you gave up on God, let me encourage you, don't allow that person to be what keeps you from God. Realize that we are all flawed. And I'll tell you right now, this church, we are a messed up church. Primarily because you got messed up pastors. Amen. And you know what? If you find a perfect church, don't go there because you'll just screw it up. Find a church. Find a church that messes up and knows that they mess up. Now, don't find one that screwed up and doesn't admit it because that's problems. But to find a place that you can be where people go, you know what, I messed up. You know, I have to apologize and ask for forgiveness all the time, not just to my family, to Ryan, to other people, to Amy, to whoever. I mean, it's just you, whatever. 2 weeks ago, I said something to Noelle that was sharp and snappy, and I'm like, Noelle, I'm sorry. Shouldn't have said it that way. Please forgive me. It's how it is. But bad Christians certainly can be a reason that people move away from God. If that's what you've discovered, if that's a reason you've left God, let me encourage you, give us another shot. We are flawed. Pastor Stephen was sharing with me this week. He said many Africans who come to the States end up walking away from God. I said, why? He said, because of a big struggle for them that is approval. They want to be seen on the same level as Americans. They don't want to be seen as less than. And good Lord, isn't it hard enough in America right now with stupid things like what's happening in Charlottesville this weekend? Good grief. But they want approval. They want to be seen as equals. And this is a direct quote from him. He says, but because they can't find approval in the church, they go look for it elsewhere. That breaks my heart. If there's one place where anyone ought to be able to find love and approval, it ought to be right here in the church of Jesus Christ. Don't allow the imperfection of those who are sincerely trying to follow Jesus to keep you away and keep you from giving God another chance. When you think about God, I want to affirm you. I get it. I get it. I would love for Christianity to be this thing that just comes nicely packaged in a neat little box with a nice little bow on top. It's what's presented to you as a kid, right? I mean, man, all the answers are right here. There's never a struggle. It's all good. And man, then you get older and you're like, whoa, not so much. Christianity is never going to fit in this box and be nice and tidy with a pretty little bow. It just doesn't work that way. But what I want to make sure you hear today is simply this. What if the reason you walked away really wasn't a good enough reason to walk away? What if God deserves a second chance? What if God deserves it because maybe the reason you left just really isn't a strong enough, good enough reason to leave? Could it be that maybe you left by choice and you blamed God even in that? Maybe it was because garbage happened to you in your life and you're blaming God. That's okay. God's got big shoulders. He can listen to you. He can take your anger and he can withhold that. He can keep that and get you through it. Could it be you did blame God? Were you taught something that gave you the wrong impression about faith? Was it the imperfection of Christians that pushed you away? What is it that keeps you from God? All I'm asking you to do is that reason good enough to keep you away? To think about that. Now, I will tell you, I realize I didn't give you a single answer as to why you should give God a second chance. For that, you will need to come back next week. And aren't you glad? It's 10:22. You're like, will this man ever shut up? But for today, all I'd close with this last question. I ask you to evaluate why you gave up on God in the first place. And is there any room for the possibility that God might deserve a second chance in your life?